will give some money on the QT. The united front is particularly important in a struggle against a common enemy, because otherwise we waste much time and energy in factional disputes which masquerade as ideological disagreements and which only help the enemy. As Malcolm said, last year I was busy attacking King and he was busy attacking the Muslims, and nobody was really attacking the devil. In the not yet liberated countries, that's the end of the quote, in the not yet liberated countries of Africa, we see the same inter-party fighting on a larger and more tragic scale, dissipating energy, retarding the liberation movement, and delighting the imperialists who turn around and say, we need more police just to protect the Africans from each other. That sounds like what's going on in South Africa today. And that letter was dated May 21st, 1964. That was the week after Malcolm had left. I referred to the long hours that Malcolm spent talking to us, trying to help us get ourselves together so that we could effectively cooperate with him. We were going to form a committee of the Organization of African Unity, consisting of people living in various parts of Africa who would cooperate with what Malcolm was going to be doing on his return to the States. Now, there was some friction in those morning sessions, and one of the books that Robert Coles referred to is The Rise and Fall of a Proper Negro by Leslie Lacey. And I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs of this and say something that Leslie does not say in the book, because we may not have many opportunities to do some record straight setting here. He talks about activities during one day of Malcolm's visit. He says, that night a crisis developed in the Afro-American community. Malcolm had returned to his place of rest. That was the Ambassador Hotel where he was staying. A few of the males in the community wanted to talk with him, needing, you might say, a soul session. The sisters who watched over him like mother hens would not hear of it. That was Vicky, Maya Angelou, a woman named Helen Darden from Washington, and myself. We always took Malcolm back to his hotel in Maya's little Fiat. The sisters who watched over him like mother hens would not hear of it. As one sister said, Malcolm is tired and has no time to be concerned with your foolishness. Malcolm was tired, completely knocked out. The brothers understood, but were having problems, severe ones, and they wanted the master's advice. If Malcolm had known of their needs, he would have come, but the sisters were having none of this foolishness. On the surface, I supported the sisters. Underneath, the situation was far more complicated, because ultimately it had nothing to do with Malcolm. The Afro-American women in our community, at least the unmarried ones, were going through a difficult period in Ghana. Aside from the normal adjustments, they had some emotional ones to make, too, to the benefits and burdens of a male-dominated black society. Since there were no rigid rules, male chauvinism prevailed. They were exceptional women, so they survived, but not without its costing some of their emotional strength. Balance that off with the fact that some of the brothers were married to white women and that the others tended to prefer the local ones. They had Ghanaian men, but these invariably had other women. Again, they could deal with that, but only a very few liked it. Around this time, I wrote, quote, black woman, you, my sister, are a sadness. You cry for men, strong men, and your voice grows stronger. You hate and you blame because your security has been threatened. A tragedy grips your consciousness. A history of rejection shapes your expectations. We let you open them, your sexual outhouse, exposed, blamed. We gave the white woman your place, our name, and believed that our children from her would grow up black, beautiful, brave, American, and free, and marry the children you gave. We gave to you out of wedlock. But our children grew up absurd. Anyway, it goes on for a little while. But the important thing about this is his attribution of our effort to shield Malcolm to some kind of sexual frustration that we were experiencing. And Vicky, Maya at the time, and I, we were all unmarried, so we are the folk he's talking about here. That's very simplistic, and it represented his effort to get back at us for something that was really quite deliberately done. We did shield Malcolm from Leslie, not from the other brothers who were there. And Vicki recalls our being in Malcolm's room one night, and they're calling up the night that he talks about trying to get Malcolm, and we just didn't allow it. The reason that happened was when Leslie first came to Ghana, and he talks about that in the book, Leslie didn't have any money. Well, neither did any of us. Vicki mentioned her two or three jobs. I had three or four. Maya had three or four. We were all broke and working for very little money. But Leslie came one day and said that he really needed some help, and he wanted to know if we could support him. And we explained to him we could barely support ourselves, and we certainly did not have money to support him. So a few days passed, and he came back again and said, told us that he had been to the American Embassy to see if they could help him, if they would give him a stipend. And he said, well, they told me that they would give me money if I would tell them what the African Americans in Ghana were doing. And then he just stopped, you know, like, here I am, up for grabs. Can you bid? You know, the Americans have put their bid in. What have you got? We were shocked because certainly we had no bid to make since we didn't have any money. And it was just, it was so appalling that anybody would actually do that. And then he came and told us that they had made him an offer. And we actually never knew what his response to them was. But we told him we couldn't support him. And therefore, we told them, we can't trust you either. The fact that you would even, we didn't even want our mail coming to the American Embassy. It would not have occurred to any of us to go there and ask them for money. So because of that, we just never trusted him fully. We liked him. He's a bright, brilliant fellow and amusing. But politically, we never knew where he stood. Now, he doesn't tell in the book that he went to the American Embassy and asked them for money, but I assure you that is what happened, and that's what accounted for the efforts to shield Malcolm from him. On the credit side, he did indeed arrange for Malcolm to make the speech at Lagon, which was very successful, because Leslie was one of the, as I recall, one of the founders of the Marxist Forum. I think our time has pretty much run out. That hour that we were to have for discussion has evaporated. But I do want to say a couple of things more. I saw after Malcolm left Ghana in September, Maya, Julian Mayfield, his wife, and I all traveled to Cairo hoping to see Malcolm and talk to him more about what the OAAU was going to be doing. Unfortunately, he was not there when we arrived. We spent about a week in Cairo, and then I went on to Ethiopia to take my job, a new job with the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa. The second night I was there in my hotel having dinner, the door opened and in walked Malcolm. He had been traveling in East Africa, and I told him, look, we've just been in Cairo looking for you and wanted to talk to you about things. So we talked there. He left, I think a day or two later, and traveled some more in East Africa. He was hoping to see His Majesty Haile Selassie, who was still ruling Ethiopia at the time. In Ghana, I had been working for the Ethiopian Embassy when he visited in May. I had been unable to get the ambassador to see Malcolm because Ethiopia was essentially a client state of the United States then. And the ambassador just refused to meet with him because he didn't think that that would meet with the pleasure of His Majesty. Malcolm similarly was unable to meet with the emperor in Ethiopia. He sent me a letter from Nairobi saying he was going to come back to Ethiopia and ask if I could arrange any way for him to have an audience with the emperor. Well, I had been there 2 weeks. I didn't know anybody who knew the emperor, and I was not successful in making that arrangement. That was one of the few frustrations that I knew he had, that inability to meet with Haile Selassie, who was an important leader in Africa at the time, and becoming more important once the organization of African Unity had been founded in Ethiopia. There are some people who make light of Malcolm's efforts to get this petition before the United Nations, criticizing the United States for its treatment of African Americans. I'll close with a quote from the book Malcolm X, The Man in His Time. This book, unfortunately, is out of print. It has wonderful essays about Malcolm. And the one, Malcolm X, An International Man, by Ruby and Essien Newton, talks about the an article in the New York Times in August 1964 discussing official American reaction regarding Malcolm's activities in Cairo. The State Department and the Justice Department have begun to take an interest in Malcolm's campaign to convince African states to raise the question of persecution of American Negroes at the United Nations. After studying Malcolm's memorandum, officials said that if Malcolm succeeded in convincing just one African government to bring up the charge at the UN, the United States government would be faced with a touchy problem. The United States, officials here believe, would find itself in the same category as South Africa, Hungary, and other countries whose domestic policies have become debating issues at the United Nations. The issue, officials say, would be of service to the critics of the United States, communists and non-communists, and contribute to the undermining of the position the United States had asserted for itself as the leader of the West in the advocacy of human rights. According to one diplomatic report, Malcolm had not met with success. But the report was not documented, and officials here today conceded the possibility that Malcolm might have succeeded in convincing an African state to bring this up. Indeed, it never happened, and it hasn't happened to this day. But the struggle does continue, and each one of us, each generation, has its own part to play. Malcolm can guide us and give us tremendous inspiration. But we need more people now to want to be Malcolm rather than to want to just study Malcolm and quote Malcolm. We need some folks to be ready to be Malcolm. And I hope perhaps one of them is at this conference today. Thank you very much.